There are a lot of ways that your life might be different from your neighbors or your coworkers or even a close family member's, but there is one thing I think that many, many of us share, and that's the challenge of finding a healthy balance between our home life and our career responsibilities. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are pleased to be broadcasting today from the campus of the University of Wisconsin, Waukesha, and we'll be featuring some very talented faculty members during both halves of today's show. First up, we have the co-authors of a book. It's called The Work-Family Debate in Popular Culture. Can Women and Men Have It All? And Ellen Lem is one of our guests. Associate Professor of English at the University of Wisconsin, Waukesha. She's also the Honors Program Coordinator and Advisor to the UW-Waukesha Student Veterans as well. And Ellen, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
With us as well, Timothy Dunn, who is an Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Wisconsin, Waukesha. And Tim, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
You know, one of the things, I should, before we even get started here, let me invite our listeners. We have a nice audience watching today, and I hope as they listen, they'll join in with their questions and comments. Just raise your hand, and Judith Sears-Poisson will come in there with a microphone. But also, as you listen, I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as well. Have you experienced challenges in trying to find a healthy work balance relationship? Or maybe you feel you've been able to achieve it, and if you have, we want to hear about it, that's for sure. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page, just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and we'll get you right on. Well, the title of your book is The Work-Family Debate in Popular Culture, Can Women and Men Have It All? And one of the things you do address in the book, which is kind of interesting, is what is it all? Yeah, how would you define it all? Tim, maybe go to you first.
Sure. So I guess in one sense, in sort of a literal sense, no one can have it all, right?
Right.
But the phrase has been around for a while, and it's come to mean something like a vibrant and successful career, right? Usually at a fairly high level of on the professional or corporate ladder, as well as a fulfilling, enriching family life as well. You know?
Yeah.
So not just having a few moments to spend with the family, but actually having meaningful time, and being able to put family concerns and family interests ahead of those of work, at least some of the time.
I know one of the themes of your book is that neither men or women have had it all in work-life balance is pretty much often. When there were more traditional gender roles firmly in place, what were we losing out on?
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Ellen, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
okay. I mean, I think that there's just a degree of satisfaction. Some of the research has shown that when women stay at home, and this is certainly not for all, but there is like sometimes an increased depression. There also can be earnings later on. One of the kind of startling statistics for me in the research was that of the poverty level later in life, two-thirds of those are women. And so a question is like, wait, how did two-thirds of the population become women? And part of the reason is that they did not work for many years. They took themselves out of the workplace. One estimate is they lost out on $400,000 worth of earnings over time. And so the combination of working and how it elevates one's sense of self-esteem and accomplishment, but then also the money that you know can be necessary for later on in life, that also is missed out on for people who don't feel that they were given the opportunity to work outside of the home. Some people choose to, and that can be a wonderful, satisfying life as well.
And so, and as you talk in your book, or write, well, maybe just to begin with, or to step back for a second, talk about your book first and how you've organized and what your main thesis is. And Ellen, do you want to start with that?
Sure. The book started because Anna Marie Slaughter, who was a professor at Princeton and she worked in the State Department for Hillary Clinton, wrote an article in Atlantic Magazine that was the most read piece that had ever been done. And she said, why women cannot have it all today. And so that sort of caught our interest. Like, we've been talking about this for so long. Why are we talking about it now? And why is it so popular? Around the same time, there was a movie that came out with Sarah Jessica Parker, who is very popular from Sex and the City. I don't know how she does it. That was a complete flop. And so we had like a strange sense of everybody's clamoring to read this article on this old topic, but all of a sudden seems new, but nobody wants to see this movie. Everybody is like, you know, saying it's like a horrible movie. So I think we gave a talk trying to figure out, why are we talking about this again? Is popular culture, what's it contributing to the debate? Why do people accept certain parts of popular culture and reject others? And so that was sort of our starting point.
Yeah, and go ahead, Tim, you're going to have some.
Well, sure, and then we found other voices also contributing. So Sheryl Sandberg, among the more famous ones, the COO of Facebook, came out with the book Lean In, and that attracted a lot of attention as well. And then there began a dialogue between Anne Marie Slaughter and Sheryl Sandberg, and other voices joined in, and we became familiar with some people who've been talking about this for a long time, like Joan Williams, for example, who's written several books on the topic, has been very important and influential scholar. So we got interested in it and quickly realized there's a lot of really interesting academic work on it. And at the same time, we both are interested in popular culture. And we've written on popular culture in the past, and we believe that there's a good dialogue between popular culture and so-called higher culture.
Yeah.
And so we thought this was a good opportunity to sort of examine how the two relate to each other.
Yeah, so it makes for an interesting read, that's for sure. Well, this issue of parents in the workplace is a huge one, and actually we have some calls. By the way, you can join in if you want to chime in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. We had this, what was the term, mommy track. That was going to talk about the experience of working women who are mothers and or might become one someday, I guess. How prevalent was that thinking when it was first discussed?
Well, the mommy track, it came out from an article that was a business article, a scholarly business article by this Felice Schwartz. It was never called Mommy Track, but that's what eventually became, which is having this alternative route for mothers so that they could still be part of the workplace but maybe go at a slower pace. But I think sort of what came out of it is that whenever somebody puts, like, mommy in front of it, there's like something negative and suspect. It's like there's the mommy wars. There's the mom, you know. It seems like it's kind of almost like it's belittling. It's and one of the also the comments is that there isn't an equivalent. Like, we don't, if there was a daddy track, like, it would be okay. But the fact that we make these special considerations just for women is a problem. And I think that's one of the things we wanted to do in our book is look at everything from men and women's perspective. There's a lot of people who've looked at this only as women, and right now men are having more struggles between work-life balance even than women, according to the research.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So this daddy track, is there? There really isn't a daddy track. No.
Well, I guess the assumption was there's a standard track that everyone must conform to, and then we'll make an exception for women who want to also help raise children, and that meant fewer hours. That meant they were perceived to have less of a commitment to the institution, less experience, less opportunity for promotion. So over time, that disadvantaged women primarily.
For sure.
And the assumption was, well, this is the way it should be. This is our work culture. It's your job. It's the woman's job. And why it should be only the woman's job, it was not ever made clear. But it's her job to sort of change her behavior and make an accommodation. It's not the workplace's job to alter its labor practices or make it easier for women and men to have this balance.
And as you point out, I think somewhere in the book, I mean the difference between the United States and other well, Europe, for example, countries is enormous.
Right. And people, I mean, we have in this country the highest level of dissatisfaction between work-life balance than anywhere else. And that's what we discuss is like, what can be done that would make it better? California is pretty radical in that they have now offering parental leave for fathers, and sometimes even making it, some places have actually made it mandatory where fathers, you have to stay home. But one of the things they've already seen the results from it is that the men are so much more engaged with their children in the long term spent that time together. And so there are things that we can do that have not been tried yet that are being done in Europe, and we're already looking at the results, and they've been, you know, really positive.
We have callers who want to visit with you, and let's go to the phones. And Jasmine in Platteville is up first. Jasmine, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi,
what's on your mind?
Well, I'm just so excited to read this book. I am a millennial Generation Xer. You know, I was born in 1980, and I grew up being told, you know, you can be anything you want to be, along with all my, you know, girl classmates. You can be an astronaut and a mother. And now that I am a professional and a mother, I see that that's pretty much impossible. You know, I do both, but I constantly feel really guilty about both. I feel like I'm not doing as good of a job as a professional that I could be doing. I'm not doing as good of a job as a mother that I could be doing. And I think we do a really big disservice to our children, you know, to tell them that.
To tell them that they can. Okay, comments? Tim, start with you.
Well, I guess the first thing I'd say, thank you for your question and your comment. I mean, I agree with you. It's very difficult. This coming from somebody who is, you know, I don't have a family. I don't have the same obligations that married people do, that people with children do, and I still struggle with work-life balance because life is not just a family. There are other pursuits that you might have. So we certainly empathize. We feel the same. And, you know, I mean, if the one thing to remember is you're not alone. I mean, like, it's not just you. It's not a failing of yours. It's not, you know, one of the things that Anne-Marie Slaughter talks about is people commonly say, well, you know, people need to roll up their sleeves and work a little harder, or women just aren't as ambitious, and that, you know, there's just no evidence of that. And so we certainly agree with you that there should be more. And one other interesting thing is, you know, there's bipartisan support for a lot of these initiatives. That was one of the things that surprised me the most, is you might have thought, well, this would support for workplace changes might fall sort of along progressive or democratic lines. But in fact, In polls, across party lines, people, there's broad support for a lot of these initiatives.
No. Ellen, you're going to...
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things I learned the most from this book, and I am a mother as well, is to just, as much as possible, ban the maternal guilt. And that's something that, like, you know, I think Sandberg's book has been misconstrued. Sometimes people feel like she's only telling you, everybody, like, you must be a great corporate executive like me. And if you really look at the book carefully, she has a lot of one of her messages is that, like, maternal guilt is deadly, that we do ourselves a disservice. Most of the women we know are doing the very best they can. They're taking care of their kids, and they also are doing their pursuits. And so the guilt, and when we look at, even in, like, there's an ep, we talk about, there's a Everybody Loves Raymond episode that we talk about. I'm like, why do we all feel so guilty? And we give an example of how when Ray Romano, when his wife wants to go to work, and how the mother-in-law is like, well, the children are going to become latchkey children, and, you know, and, like, it's you feeling guilt for a reason. It's not like, you know, it's not just because you're crazy, but a lot of our culture is making us feel that way, as if, you know, there's one way to do it. So, you know, our book does, we agree with Sheryl Sandberg, who says we need to see more examples of how people are doing it, and not just, like, anybody can. So really appreciate your calling in and sharing your experience, which is very common, I think, with many women who are working, are mothers.
Yeah, Jasmine, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We are talking today about whether or not you and I can have it all in the workplace and in our family lives. Our two guests, the authors, Ellen Lim and Tim Dunn, who are associate professors Ellen in English at the University of Wisconsin, Waukesha. Tim, Associate Professor of Philosophy. They're the co-authors of the book, The Work Family Debate in Popular Culture, Can Women and Men Have It All? I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up a little bit later on, I hope you're going to stay tuned right through this program. 11:45, we're going to learn how to live sustainably, even if you live in an urban environment. That's at 11:45 today. Right now, we're talking about the search for work-life balance and how men's and women's efforts are portrayed in popular culture with our two guests from the University of Wisconsin, Waukesha, authors Ellen Lem and Tim Dunn. You, again, can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Do you have it all? Would you like to have it all? How do you, if you have it all, how do you do it? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And let's take another call. Paula in Oshkosh, you are up. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me on. I would like to throw another dimension into this discussion, and that is grandparents and older aunts and uncles, the older population, who see what's happening with our younger population trying to have it all, and see what's happening with the family structure, and what is happening with trying to pass on the wisdom and the stories and the traditions. This is part of the discussion, I think, that is also very important to have, and maybe not in this program, maybe in another program, but with parents and children so busy in their lives, and I see it in our children and in our grandchildren, there is not time for the quiet family dinner, sitting around talking, playing games, doing things like this. Those types of things are kind of left out of life right now. And I just wanted to make that point that this is something that maybe we should be thinking about also.
Paula, you're raising some really good points there, and let's turn to our guest. Ellen, start with you and then go to Tim, maybe.
Sure. I think that's an excellent point. And one of the books that I read for the research sort of indirectly brought up what you're talking about. It's called Overwhelmed, and it's written, it's sort of a personal memoir, but it also has lots of material. And what she talks about is that our culture glorifies busyness. Even, you know, they did an analysis of Christmas letters, and everybody, you know, 85% were like, we're so busy, you know, and what's happening is that people are forgetting about the important human interaction that was much more so part of people's lives before everything became so electronic. And so I think that you're right, that there is a lot of wisdom from the past about before we became so wired. And her book really does talk about trying to get rid of the busyness culture and spending more time with each other. And I think that that's part of what we're also trying to bring up in the book about, you know, we all know that we have to work, but we have to remember the important parts of life, the life part of the balance. And some of that comes from quality time with the people we care the most about.
Yeah, good points. Tim, comment?
Yeah, I think it is a good question. And I would add, you know, you mentioned meals in particular. So some people may be familiar with Michael Pollan, who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma and has published a number of books about food. He's part of a movement, you know, a slow food movement. And recently he and some other commentators were saying, you know what, people need to slow down. We need to cook more at home, not only for reasons of family bonding and relationships and better family time, but also it's healthier, right? It's you save money. And interestingly, a columnist for the online magazine Slate responded by saying, look, you know, it's all well and good for you to say that, but nobody has any time to do that, right? Like, especially not working class women who can barely afford to make ends meet. And here you have somebody lecturing them on how they need to run their families or what they need to do. So it's not that Pollan is wrong. I think he's probably right. Other things equal, we'd be better off if we did that. But you can see that the pushback is that people are saying, well, it's not possible for me to do that.
Yeah. I think just as an aside, I can remember not long ago doing an interview with the woman who has written a cookbook on sheet cake dinners, how you can do it on a sheet cake, and that's become very popular. And one of the main reasons is because it's something you can do fairly quickly and you only have one pan at the end, so you don't have so much cleanup and things like that.
Definitely right. I mean, I think I've heard people cook for the week on Sunday, you know, yeah, so that they can, because it is so difficult being pulled in different directions between, you know, work, which sometimes seems really inflexible, and then wanting to take care of one's family.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
One of the examples, both Anne Marie Slaughter and Sheryl Sandberg make a point of saying, I stop my schedule at mealtime.
Yes.
To be with my family. And, you know, they're adamant about it. And Slaughter says, look, I'll return after 8 o'clock if there's important business. This was when she was the dean of the Kennedy School of Government. And so, you know, they're making a stand and making a personal example that this is a priority. And guess what? It turns out that life goes on and people can arrange their schedules and finish on time and actually go home. And in fact, another thing we talk about in the book is there's this culture of time macho where the thought is I'm contributing more simply by being there, by mm-hmm. the more hours I put in, the more I'm doing for the organization. But the research shows that actually that there's a point at which that becomes inefficient and people start to actually be unproductive, and so they'd be better off leaving. And what they're doing is they're setting a line, a boundary line, and saying, listen, we should all put that and make that a priority.
Yeah. I was thinking back to somebody telling me off air once about some colleagues who were at a hospital, and I won't say which one it is, but there were two top surgeons. And so one was coming in at 7:30 in the morning. Well, then the other one started coming in at 5 minutes earlier than that. And then the other guy started coming in 5 minutes earlier. And they got to the point where they were coming in at 5:30 in the morning because, what you know, they wanted to be the first one there.
Right, and we sort of show similar to the maternal guilt. It's also just doesn't come out of the air. Like this idea of being this time macho culture, like we see it in popular culture, that there's a lot of examples of it. Of we see men particularly, they've gotten more of that message about it, about, you know, that you need, in order to be a breadwinner, you have to be at the office from the crack of dawn. And, you know, it's sort of selling them short and taking away the possibility of them having a more engaged family life. So it's definitely has roots, at least, in some of the culture.
Well, all of our lines are filled here, so I want to give others a chance to join in. And we'll go to Milwaukee next. And Ted in Milwaukee, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I just would like to say that in anything, you need understanding and love. Love and understanding is the best thing in any relationship to even start to have the conversation of balance. And also, I think that too much burden as far as the conversation is put on the woman, because sometimes the men have to step up to the plate and drop some of his ego and pick up some of the slack so the woman can do what she would like to do in order to advance the family, period. So that, you know, that's really all I have to say on that conversation.
Well, Ted, you make some good points here, and I'm sure Tim and Ellen both want to comment. Tim, start with you.
Sure. That that reminds me of, I mean, this is an interesting point. Thank you. I think this is an example of how popular culture can play a role.
Yes.
We give examples in our book of recent shows and movies that portray men in caretaker roles without sacrificing their masculinity, right? And so one example that I talk about is the show Louis with the comic Louis C.K., which is sort of loosely based on his real life. So he's a divorced father with two girls that he shares custody of. And in the very first, the pilot episode of the show, there's this crazy scenario where he's on a PTA. He's a chaperone for a trip up in they live in New York. And their bus breaks down in a dangerous neighborhood. And so he takes charge and makes sure the kids are safe. And they show him going to PTA meetings and other things that traditionally women have been expected to do more than men. And so when shows show the men doing those things, especially men who are in other ways perfectly masculine or, mm-hmm. or good role models for men, I think that that's a positive sign, and that makes it easier for men to say, well, why can't I do the same?
Yeah, the television show, is it the football coach?
Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights, which is a very good show.
Right, and we do talk about that here we are in Texas in sort of macho football culture, and the main character says, I'm a man who takes care of his woman, and what that means is when he encourages her to go to the book group so that he can take care of the infant child, and we just think, right on, like that's a message that men have to see, that taking care of your wife means letting her have time away from home, pursuing pleasure, not just for work, but like allowing her to be taken care of. And so I think the caller is right on by saying that so much starts with love at its core. And I'm excited to see even kids' shows. Like we talk about Adventure Time, it's a show on Cartoon Network, and there's a cartoon, this Jake, and there's an episode, Jake the Dad, and he's just taking care of his babies, you know, and you see the nurturing and the mm-hmm. the care, just so that taking care of children does not belong to one gender alone.
Talking with Ellen Lem and Tim Dunn, both are associate professors at the University of Wisconsin-Waukesha and are the authors of the book, The Work Family Debate in Popular Culture, Can Women and Men Have It All? And this is a fascinating conversation here from my perspective, and I bet from yours too. You may have a question or comment. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And let's go to Watertown next and talk with Stephanie. Stephanie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Really interesting program. What I was wondering about was it's becoming more socially acceptable in the U.S. to have a work-life balance, whereas, Europe is known for doing that well. I was wondering how they financially supported it. Is it just through taxes, or is it through employer mandates? But how do they actually, pay for the better time off to, give families a better work-life balance? And thanks for taking my call.
Okay, Ellen, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sure. Well, there's a variety of different ways. I mean, there is some federal support. And the interesting thing is that we did it in this country as well. Like one of the best daycare centers that people have been using as a model is the Department of Defense, which currently has been running for years, and very high quality teachers and things like that. And so we have done it a few times, but there is much more federal funds that are given to it in other countries, and we almost had it here. There was a Child Affordable Act in the 70s that would have allowed there to be support for child care centers so that people wouldn't have to be paying one-third of their salaries for daycare, which is currently the case for some women. But there's also initiatives where corporations have gotten on board to do it themselves. both in Europe and a little bit here, what they see is there's tremendous satisfaction that workers are, when they feel less divided by this this struggle between the two, that they are stay on longer. And so some corporations have also, sometimes they will have not just daycare centers, but they'll also have after school care, so that parents, they're a safe place for their kids to go, since the work hours do not gel well with school hours, as everyone who knows that there's a few hour differential. So some corporations have also taken it as well. So there are different models to do to create more flexibility.
We have I had an email from Jessica in Milwaukee who said, my husband and I have always worked 75% time. This has meant giving up some of the finer things in life, maybe because we don't make as much money. However, it's allowed us to have more time for families, friends, and hobbies. I think it would be hard to cut back from full-time to part-time, but always working part-time, so they each work 75% time, has been a great choice for us. Interesting, Tim.
Sure. That's a great choice. If you have a partner and you have the same, you know, you're able to do that and manage your responsibilities if you have them. My sister lives in the Northern Virginia area, and she lives alone. And first of all, it's a very expensive area to live in, and it's gotten a lot more expensive in the last 20 years. So, you know, it's not like she that's where we're from, and, yeah, you know, it's just sort of all of a sudden it's very expensive. So there's that problem. But, I mean, she's told me repeatedly that she would, she makes good money, but she would gladly give up some of her salary if she had, in her case, the big issue is more vacation time. And this is one thing that has always perplexed me and was one of the reasons why I was not attracted to corporate America for a career, is that there's just incredibly stingy vacation offerings here. And you would think the market would respond, that companies would offer more generous policies for lower salary. But for some reason, that's not the case.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
We have a question from our audience here at UW Waukesha. Hi.
Hi, my name is Susan. Two things about that: the vacation time, really taking it with your kids, and what we used to do occasionally when the kids got older, when they were in high school, we would everybody would call in sick one day. I hope none of my bosses are listening. But everybody called in sick, and we went and played hooky, the whole family. And, oh, was that a wonderful day. And it really helped to make sure that we all understood that we all cared and that we all mattered, you know. But the other thing is that throws makes it very difficult is when somebody gets sick. When one of the kids gets sick, who's going to stay home with them? What's going to happen with them? Who's contagious? How many kids stay home? One kid goes to school, one kid stays home. You know, those issues can really, you think you're going along and you've got everything handled and all the Girl Scout meetings and the violin lessons and everything's all figured out, and then one of the kids gets sick and the whole thing goes to pieces.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a system for helping with that.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you very much for that question. Ellen, did you want to?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely came up in the research, is that countries where people feel less divided by it, they have time set aside, more personal time to deal with illness. Because, I mean, it's on record that there are a lot of kids that go to school sick because there's no other alternative. There aren't other relatives to stay with. There isn't a child care alternative. And so, you know, not only does the child stay sick longer, but then the parent is stressed and doesn't have enough free time. So, I mean, you're right that is an issue. And you know, that's one of the things that what people are looking for is greater flexibility. There's something, a kind of work now called results-only work, which is let me not go to the office from like this time to this time every day at the same time. Let me just do my work when my work is done, so that if a kid is sick, a person can stay home and take care of them and then make up their work on another day. So I think that you are aware that, you bring up a point of where we really do need to make some changes. And I love your hooky idea, too.
I do, too. I haven't thought of that one. But that's a great one. Well, Dolores in Kenosha has a comment for us, so let's go there. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. Thank you to you, Larry, and your guests. That hooky idea is intriguing, except I'm a nursing supervisor, and I get the calls when people call in. But my husband and I, we have four adult children. They've turned out well. They didn't get to do everything they wanted to do. They got to do the things that were important to them, as far as we could take it. And I don't think you can do it all. But going back to, you know, the older lady who talked about, you know, the older aunts and the grandmas and that, and the man who said, you know, men have to step up. My husband's always done that for all the years of our marriage. We have worked opposite shifts, which enabled us to take care of the sick kids at home. It's, you can't have dinner at home every night, but when you have off and you have dinner, it's make an event out of it. We used to have the kids make menus, you know, for something special. When you get to the holidays, you get involved with all the relatives. Well, somebody takes Christmas, somebody takes Thanksgiving, somebody takes Easter. So our sacred, it's still to this day, is St. Patrick's Day. The kids come over with their spouses now, and St. Patrick's Day belongs to us. But I used to make a special cake for Valentine's Day. I used to listen to stuff on the radio. Oh, today is National Donut Day, things like that. And the one thing that we always did was we always read to our children, and we always got outdoors with them when the weather was decent and just did different things and kept together as a family that way. And I think that that's made them into the adults they are.
Well, I thank you, Dolores, very much for calling. Tim, a comment from you first?
Sure, yeah. I certainly agree with your thinking that, look, we can't have it all, and, you know, people do have to make sacrifices. It's not as if we're saying that government or businesses have to solve all of our own problems, and there's certainly a large role for individuals to step up. And, you mentioned men needing to do more. There's one area that we haven't talked as much about, and that is sort of the work-life balance at home and the amount of housework that men do. And Sheryl Sandberg in particular emphasizes that in her book. And, it's easy for men to think that they're doing their share because they mow the lawn and take out the garbage or do more than that. But the studies show that women consistently put in many more hours than men do. So it's easy to neglect that if you're a man or a woman to think that it's equitable when it isn't. So for families that are looking for balance, that here's something you can do without waiting for a policy change. You can sort of take inventory of how much you're doing at home and maybe see if you can do more.
Yeah. And that may be the note to end on. As this has been a very fascinating conversation, and I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be with us today. It was wonderful, and I know I took you out of your classrooms today, so I really appreciate you taking the time away from your students.
Oh, well, they were very understanding. We appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yes, thanks so much.
I've noted that myself. Students never seem to mind when you say, oh, I have to leave you early today for some reason, and they... Oh, too bad, and they're, out the door. But this has been wonderful. Thank you again so much. Ellen Lamb, our guest today, one of our guests, Associate Professor of English at the UW-Waukesha, also the Honors Program Coordinator and Advisor for the UW-Waukesha Student Veterans. Timothy Dunn is Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Wisconsin-Waukesha, and together they wrote the book, The Work-Family Debate in Popular Culture, Can Women and Men Have It All? really interesting conversation about work-life balance, wasn't it? And it's so great to have to be able to have two UW-Waukesha faculty members with us today, especially because we're at the UW-Waukesha. Coming up next, we're going to visit with another of the great instructors here at UW-Waukesha. Quentin Bendixson teaches sustainability, and he lives it, too. I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.